today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Sharif don't like it.
Wait, why?
He thinks it's not kosher.
Is there anything I can do?
No, you know he really hates it.
This is a public service announcement with Guitar!
Man, Patrick, Clash Week is almost over.
You know, I kind of feel, Jim, like the Clash at the end of their career. A little confused, a little strung out, a little like I just went through a dryer for about 4 years and just came out the other side.
So, you're listening to Rock in the Suburbs. You're listening to our special Clash Week in which we are talking about each of the five proper Clash studio albums, one each day.
It's the most magical week of the year.
It is. I wish every week could be Clash Week.
Yeah,
I live every week like it's Clash Week. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And on Friday, we're talking about Combat Rock, which I believe, for both of us, was our introduction to the Clash, right?
Isn't that weird?
Isn't that funny?
I bought this record in late 1982 on the advice of some older co-workers at the record store I worked at. And I think I said earlier, probably within 2-3 weeks, I had London Calling. But those first 3 weeks, I had Combat Rock, Jim. And that was my only Clash record. And that's how I learned about them.
Combat Rock was 1982, yeah. And it was a big commercial success.
Was. I was a sophomore in high school, I think. Or no.
Yeah, somewhere around
there. Yeah, like the end of my, or middle of my sophomore year, something I think, like essentially.
That.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. sounds about right. And it was positioned to be a commercially successful album.
That's right.
We'll get into all that in a second, but I'm pretty sure, if my memory is correct, and it may not be because there's a lot of years in this head right now, but I'm pretty sure this is the first Clash song I ever heard. That is, of course, Rock the Casbah.
Yep.
I think everybody knows that song
yeah.
by now. It was a big hit song. It was mm-hmm. a big MTV hit, which is the first place I saw it.
Yeah.
And it had a video where, I don't know, there was like a shake and, you know, I don't know, dancing and a, yeah, right. I don't know, it was kind of crazy. It was very captivating when you're like in high school
yeah.
and watching TV, you're like, what is this?
Yep.
But I will say, it's funny because apparently Topper Heaton wrote like a lot of the music for that. He wrote the piano part mm-hmm. and he wrote a lot of the other parts. So maybe different in some ways from other Clash compositions, but yet it almost feels like sort of like everything that makes the Clash great comes together yeah. in that song. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly.
It's like rock, it's dance, it's, you know, it's got the, you know, swing and soul and
yeah.
like everything is really just perfect in that song.
Mm-hmm. And it's got the contemporary touches, like the hand claps that sound kind of generated, right? They had an ear toward the pop market.
Right.
And so
interesting. And it's political too.
Yeah, exactly. And so interesting that, you know, Topper wrote that music apparently at the piano, just kind of came up with it because at the time Combat Rock was recorded, he was in serious
right.
addiction mode. Right. And, beyond the fact that Mick Jones and Joe Strummer had started to drift apart in a very Lennon and McCartney kind of way, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had started to think about their own types of things and compositions and methods and were not speaking that much. Topper was also drifting off in a different direction too. So the band was really coming apart
right.
at this point, but came together, as you said, for an incredible single right here that was just mind-blowing.
Right. So combat rock is, you know, coming off of Sandinista and before that London Calling, where yep. they had a double album and then a triple album. This is back to a single album, yep. although apparently they wrote and recorded enough music that they could have done another double, but yeah. I think wisely they decided not to do that.
Yeah, and legend has it there was a production job done at the end of this by Glenn Johns, right. who was a production masterpiece guy, right? He was who's next guy, right? He had done amazing things.
I mean, seriously, who's next?
Right? You know, in the way that Lifehouse was, you know, something sprawling that he made who's next out of, you know, there was 78, 79 minutes of combat rock that he cut down to 45 minutes and made a great record.
Right. And supposedly Mick Jones was not happy with it at first, but he's come around to it.
That's right.
That Glenn Johns did a really great job with this.
He was a super pro.
Recorded in New York.
Yeah. Right? For the most part, influenced by Vietnam, influenced mm-hmm. by a trip to some places the Clash had never been, Japan, right? Thailand, I think, is where the cover photo was taken, and they were in their most Castro-esque, skinny, you know, mode, right? And sort of on a railroad track where, you know, a train might run them down at any minute, right?
Yes, it feels like a very political sort of statement on the cover.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Strummer doesn't have it here, but he does in the Rock the Casbah video. He adopted a mohawk haircut. So he was really getting into like the sort of like hardcore punk rock look.
Yep.
I think combat rock and every successful rock band sort of goes through this. I feel like this is the first album where sort of like they know they're the Clash.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
That's so exactly right.
Everything ben. Else yeah. is like them just sort of doing what they want to sort of just be a band. Mm-hmm. And this is them sort of saying, kind of having to live up to the legacy maybe that they've already established, right? Or the credibility they've already established or whatever it is. And, you know, every band has that. They sort of know that you're no longer up and coming. You have reached a certain level.
Yeah.
And it's even to the point where in the cover photo, Joe's wearing a Clash shirt,
right?
So it's like they know they're the Clash. They're trying to live up to a certain image at this point, totally. Right?
And I think
not to say it's bad in any way, because there's some really great stuff on here. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think in the way I was talking about the cover of the first Clash album with the torn edges of the newspaper and the stark colors, when I saw the cover of Combat Rock, you know, as a younger man, that conveyed certain information to me, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the dark colors and the sleeveless shirts and the tough look and the cigarettes. Like, these guys were really into being a rock band to me.
Right.
You know, they looked like, in some ways, like the Rolling Stones, which I was cool with, but their music was so much cooler at the time than the Rolling Stones, you know, that it just blew me away. And that, you know, it's okay to walk it, but man, if you can talk it as well. And that's kind of what the Clash did on this record. When I first got into them, I was like, these guys are serious, man. They know what they're doing.
And like you said, this album is very much influenced by Vietnam, even though, you know, you're talking 82 by this point.
Right.
But I mean, I think you and I both know, you know, we grew up in the sort of post-Vietnam era to a large extent, and how much that shadow kind of hung over.
Certainly did.
A lot.
We knew people that were there and brothers and sisters that were affected by it, for sure.
And, you know, you still had this feeling of, you know, you're heading into you had the Cold War going on and things like that. You still had this feeling of, because of Vietnam, you know, are we going to enter another war? Am I going to be drafted? What is going to happen, right?
Yeah.
There was that whole, it was a different sort of sense of what it meant to be sort of a young male at that time, I think. And,
you know, woke you up. This record woke you up. At least it woke me up. And this song especially woke me up.
This is a public service announcement with guitar.
I love that song.
Man, that kind of blew my mind, Jim, because I was like, okay, cool. This is going to be like, you know, some sort of a constitution thing where you list out all your rights, but you only have three rights. And one of those is not to be killed.
Right.
And that kind of woke you up. Unless, wait a minute, got killed by a policeman, then nobody's going to talk about that. I mean, in 1982, that was not a thought that crossed people's minds in the suburbs. Like, I wasn't a kid who understood right. what the hell that was, right? It was mind-blowing.
Right. You get your education from the Clash.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. I would suggest that a lot of this still applies today.
Yeah, it does, right? Man. You can still get an education from the Clash.
That's right. But that was the side one, track one. Yeah, so again, sort of like establishing the record.
First
right?
Clash song I probably ever heard in my own private room where I put the needle down on a record. This was it.
And what I think I love about that song, and this again, I'm probably repeating myself here. It's an amazing thing about the Clash.
Yeah.
Is, you know, it sounds different for them. Mm-hmm. But yet still sounds like the Clash.
Exactly right. Yeah. And almost in some ways they go back to rockabilly, right?
When yeah.
you get to that
yeah.
little rhythm and that chomping guitar, yet it still sounded contemporary and big, right? They put some reverb yeah. on it, and it was kind of parroting, but it was awesome. You know what I mean? It was Johnny Cash, plus it was Carl Perkins, yeah. plus it was some kind of weird rockabilly, plus it was contemporary, plus a policeman was killing somebody outside your doorstep and you never knew about it.
But I don't know that anybody else could write it like that. Nah. Like, it just is, it has this unique sound. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you can hear the influences, you know, you can hear what it draws off of,
yeah.
but yet it sounds unlike anything you've heard before.
Yeah. And you made a good point earlier in the week, Jim, about Strummer's vocals. And here he's become a master yes. of singing and yes. shouting and barking, right? He's singing as no one ever has before in the history of rock and roll, yeah. right? I mean, he's just developed the most English yet American style mm-hmm. you could ever
yeah.
imagine.
That's a really good way to put yeah. it.
And you know, Jim, it's late on Friday. I'm drunk. You're drunk. So I'm going to ask you this question, you know, the way drunk people do.
Yeah.
Put these five albums in order for me. What are your 1 through 5s?
Okay.
Because I've tried to draw this out of him, folks, and I haven't been able to. So
no.
We're going to hear it now.
No, I'll do this.
I'm putting you on the spot.
It's not going to be terribly crazy, other than the fact that...
Mine won't either.
Other than the fact that, you know, I've had a few drinks and I probably will forget one. So what are we, five? There's five?
Yeah, okay. There's five, Jim.
Okay, there's five. I would go London Calling 1.
Okay.
Debut album 2.
Okay.
Either version.
Mm-hmm.
Sandinista 3, give them enough rope 4, wow. and then Combat Rock
wow.
5.
You're putting Combat Rock at the bottom, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, like, number 5 on this list is still a really great album.
Oh my God. Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with you on the first two. I'm going to go with London Calling. I'm going to go with the debut album mm-hmm. second. I'm actually, this is going to be surprising to uh-huh. you, but I'm actually going to go with Combat Rock
okay.
third.
I appreciate
then
that.
Then Sandinista, and then Give Him Enough Rope. That's the way I put them.
All right.
That's the way I put them.
So yeah. Combat Rock, it's funny because...
But part of it is because I fell in love with that album first.
Well, and
it's, and that's... So part of it's romance. It's probably not better than Sandinista, but for me, that's the way I put them.
So here's the funny thing about that, because this is where I kind of came into the band... And then work backwards. I think maybe in some weird way that kind of influences why I don't appreciate as much as I like their earlier stuff. But
sense.
Yet I listened to this again fresh yesterday for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of like we were saying about, you know, Sandinista, how you discover new things. I was kind of blown away by some of the lesser track, not lesser, some of the lesser known tracks
yes.
On mm-hmm. this as well. I mean, they were still a band that was just, you know, out there trying to do great work.
And one thing I'll say too, Jim, before we say sayonara for the week, is that to me, another reason I like Combat Rock is the seeds that were planted for Big Audio Dynamite. So I think
yeah.
there are some seeds of that band, and I love that band immediately. So when Mick Jones was... sort of, you know, if you believe everything you read, that he was sort of forced out of the band, right? He immediately got a new project together, right? And that, man, that first Big Audio Dynamite, second one's great too, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, The Bottom Line is an incredible song that could have been a Clash song.
The Bottom Just Line, Come song. On Every Beatbox.
Oh, yeah, man. Everything was great.
Medicine Show.
Yeah.
I mean, those are great songs. And, well, so what Mick was really into, he was really getting more into, like, dance music.
Yep.
And, you know, like you said, this album was recorded. It was really long at first. It had to kind of be wrestled back.
It was kind of mixed version.
And a lot of that was because Mick wanted to do like extended mixes of things and really go off and do some different stuff. When he was allowed to sort of like do that on his own, I think he did some pretty amazing work for that, especially for that time period. What are you talking, mid-80s?
Those sounded so futuristic, those big Audio Dynamite records. Yeah.
I mean, it's the kind of stuff that later you had like, you know, Fatboy Slim and Moby and, you know, all those like 90s kind of like DJ types. Mm-hmm. You know, Mick Jones was out there ahead of all of those guys.
Yeah.
Agreed. But I also will say that, you know, I think Joe Strummer, it took him longer to find his footing. He tried to keep the Clash going.
Yep.
In sort of a misguided way. And there was one more official Clash release called Cut the Crap, which came out in 85. But nobody thought of it as really a Clash album. It didn't have Mick, and it had like two other guys and a different drummer, and it was really just
Paul was still involved, but in a half-hearted way.
Not the best. And
no,
and then Joe went off and did some solo work.
He did.
And I think there's some real, there are some good stuff there that you can find. I think it just took him a little bit longer to kind of figure out what Joe Strummer, to kind of find himself, what Joe Strummer was as a musician.
And one of the ways he found himself, Jim, was to go back to his roots, right? He was playing a little more roots rock. He was playing a little more pub rock, right? With his band, the Mescaleros. What was that band?
Yes, Mescaleros.
Mescaleros, right? Where he sort of, you know, went back to that. Although, you know, there's one or two decent things on Cut the Crap, but I think for the most part, it's a footnote, right? It was over by the time Combat Rock was over.
But go out and find, I think the high point of Joe Strummer's solo work is an album called Streetcore.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
Yeah, nice record.
Mm-hmm. His version of Redemption Song in particular is haunting.
Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption songs.
Yeah, and I think that it's an absolute tragedy how young Joe Strummer departed the planet. You know, if you think of some of the later careers of some songwriters, right, that sort of survived the punk era, you know, and started writing songs and became poets, I'm sure Joe would have done the same thing. He would have found his voice and continued to be, you know, creating and agitating, just like D. Boone. I think there's some parallels to that band in many ways.
There's a really good Joe Strummer documentary called The Future is Unwritten, which kind of follows him post Clash and, you know, kind of honestly follows kind of his, these kind of struggles of self and sort of trying to find his new voice and his way in the world and everything. And, and it, you know, ends after he died. And it's really very touching. And, you know, I can remember when Joe Strummer died, and that was a tough day.
That was
a tough day.
That was
and,
super rough.
You know, you sort of felt like
he was indestructible.
Yeah. And you know, you really felt like one of the, not only just one of the greats had died, but somebody you, when you listen to those records, you felt a real connection with.
Yeah. Somebody was on your side, right?
Yeah, he understood, exactly. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. So here's what I want to do. Let's just do the little outro thing, which is that you should listen to Rock in the Suburbs on your various podcast platforms once in a while. No.
Every day.
Every day you should do that. Clash Week has been great. I know we've run long on a lot of these episodes, but you know what? We're doing that because it's Clash
Week.
And it's one of the greatest bands ever. It's the only band that matters. And so you're going to have to listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, we want to hear what you love about the Clash.
We desire that.
If you don't like them, don't let us know that. Just tell us what you love about the Clash. You can do that in some various ways. Number one, call us. 612-440-1984. We will put your voice on a future show. You can also email us rock@suburbspod.com. You can also find us on Twitter @suburbspod or on Facebook @suburbspod, or you can visit our website, which is suburbspod.com.
.com.
There you go. Now, after all this week,
yeah,
we're going to end with a song from Combat Rock.
Yeah.
That, as much as we talk about how great The Clash is, honestly, for any other band, if they had only written and recorded this one song,
yeah,
it would be a pretty great career, right?
Absolutely.
So the song is
Straight to Hell.
I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you next week.
Key line, man. It ain't Coca-Cola, it's rice.
What a killer song.